Hey everyone, how are you doing? I hope you all had a great week. It's Justin Kahn and you're listening to The Quest. And today my guest is Matteo Francesetti, the CEO and co-founder of 8Sleep. So I love this conversation because I think that sleep is one of the most important habits for founders or really anyone else. And having a great night of sleep is what sets up the foundation of your day to be excellent. At least that's what I've always found. And in our conversation, we dive into some practical advice on improving health and longevity through optimizing sleep, the importance of prototyping your product, and how difficult and weird it is to scale a hardware product. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to drop us a rating, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and check out all Quest-related content at listen.justin.quest. One more thing before we hop into the episode. I have an exciting announcement to make. The Quest has teamed up with Universe App to give away $1,000 in cash to one of you guys. Here's how it'll work. We're launching a contest to see who can come up with the worst startup idea ever. See if you can beat Justin TV. To enter, you'll use the Universe's site building app, which we'll link to in the show notes below, and you will create a landing page for your awful startup idea. The page should communicate clearly what your product or company is, why it's important, and what problems it will solve in the most inefficient and possibly unethical way possible. You'll be judged on both the idea and the design of your site. And once you're done, head over to my Twitter page and submit your URL on an Airtable form before August 17th. I'll announce the winner on Twitter and DM you personally, so make sure you're following me there. In addition to the $1,000 cash prize, also roast your startup idea and website in a video. And we might be able to do this over a Zoom call where you can pitch me your insane idea. Head over to onuniverse.com and start getting building. All right, here's Matteo. Matteo, thanks for coming on. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I just want to dive in and start about, we'll get into 8Sleep, but I want to talk about who you are first and how you were in the position to start a company, because you had a like very varied background, right? You've kind of done a bunch of different careers. So can you tell me about that? I heard that you were a tennis player first. Is that true?
Yeah. When I was a teenager, that is how I was spending my time. So I was playing tennis tournaments. It was called under 12, so 12 years old, 14 years old, 16 years old. Then I stopped when I was close to 18 years old. But during that time, yeah, I kept playing. I was training like 4 hours every day, 6 days a week.
So were you thinking about going pro at that point? Was that the goal?
Yeah, so it was up to 16, 17. Then my knee started hurting, and then I had 2 surgeries. And then is when I started slowing down. But yeah, in the first years, the goal was, can I make it to pro?
I mean, that must have taught you an incredible work ethic to be training 4 hours a day.
Yeah, even because my mom is a teacher, right? And so my dad didn't care much about school, but my mom was, okay, you can play tennis as long as you do well at school. And so what was happening is that I was coming back from school, we were eating, at 2 p.m. I was leaving. I was training until something like 6. I was going back home. I was eating. And then I was training again in the evening for athletic stuff. And so I didn't have time to do homeworks. So my mom was waking me up every morning somewhere between 4 and 5 a.m. just to do the homework with me. And so every morning she was coming there. I don't even know how she found the energy and the diligence to keep pushing, because she was pushing harder than me, right?
Yeah.
And this every day.
And so then, like, your tennis dreams were kind of, sounds like, put on hold or permanently for the your knee surgeries and knee injuries. Like, then how did you decide what you wanted to do?
Yeah, so 2 things happened. First, one, I started racing cars. I raced with go-karts with some F1 drivers. And then I raced the Italian and European hill climbing championship. 2 years ago, I also raced the 12 hours of Abu Dhabi with a GT car. I finished 3rd. Yeah, because my dad was 2 times Italian champion as a driver. And so I grew up going to the tracks where he was racing. So I have always been passionate about motorsport and F1. But I really started studying law because my dad was a lawyer. My sister is a lawyer. And so at the time, you know, I was coming from sport. I didn't really care about my career. I say, well, whatever, I'll do law and I can work with my dad. And then during the first year at college, I started reading about these super lawyers that they were working on the biggest transaction in the world, you know, working on mergers, IPOs, and big securities. And so I became super passionate. And I said, look, I want to do this thing. It's the closest thing to sport that I can do in a professional career. At the time, I didn't speak English at all, zero. I was like 21. I didn't know English at all. And I said, no, I want to do that. But to do that, you had to speak English. And you had to graduate magna cum laude with honor. And so I was not on that track because I was doing okay, but you know. And so everything switched on my mind, you know, my competitive mind was triggered. And so from there, I started hammering it and I learned how to speak English. I graduated with honor. And then I made it in the two largest law firms in Europe and probably in the world.
Which firm did you join?
Yeah, it's called Allen & Overy and Freshfield Brookhouse Deringer. So it's called Magic Circle. There are two UK firms founded like 100 years ago and like 5,000 lawyers working there, that kind of thing.
Yeah, on all the world's mergers and acquisitions, transactions.
Yeah.
So you moved to UK and you were starting your career as a lawyer. And then how did you become a founder? Like, I feel like there's so many people, like my podcast is all aspiring, you know, founders, people who like wanted, they're like, a lot of them are working at jobs like that, trying to figure out how to break into like becoming a founder. So tell us about that journey.
So I was really lucky, right? So in Italy, you cannot raise money for your business. At least you couldn't at the time it started, but I was the right guy at the right time. So there was probably the only bubble that Italy had in the past 30 years that was renewable energy. And so there was this incentive program from the government where they were paying a feed-in tariff for green energy. So a lot of private equity funds started coming to Italy and they wanted to develop a large utility scale solar plants. And what happened was that my law firm was the number one in whole Europe for these project finance deals. And so I started talking to some of these big private equity funds on my own, and I started bringing clients to the firm. But the firm said, oh, you are an intern. You shouldn't bring clients. You should study. Stop bringing clients. I said, that doesn't make sense to me. These guys, they want to invest $50 million in a project. Why should I stop just because I'm an intern? And so I started doing some projects on the side for these guys working at night. In the law firm, you know, you finish like at 10 p.m. And so from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., I was working on these side projects with the guy who was my co-founder at the time. And this thing took off. And so we started making so much money that we could leave the law firm, and we had made like, I think, $500,000 by the time I left the law firm. It was already in the bank, but it was generated by revenue and it was net. So that is how we started. And we did that for 2 years. Then we sold that company. We sold it because the feed-in tariff changed. And so substantially the market was crashing. So we were kind of lucky to still make some money before there was the total collapse of the system. And I took that money and I came to the US and I redid the same thing. And then that company got acquired by Panasonic, by an affiliate company of Panasonic. And then finally I got in tech, real tech, as you know.
How did you know you wanted to come to the US?
So before selling the Italian, the European, we started opening the US. There were no big opportunities in Europe at the time, at least not that I could see. And I lived 6 months in the US when I was studying English to really learn. I moved to San Diego and I studied at SDSU. And so I always had that dream, but it was almost more a dream. But we had this partner, he left Morgan Stanley to join, and he was the third co-founder of, you know, this solar company, which was a copy of what we did in Europe, just in the US. And so everything was making sense. And it was funny because I remember that we sold the European company and the following morning I left for the US for good. And I didn't empty my apartment in Milan at the time. My mom did it for me. So it was just go, go, go. And
so you were sure, you were like, I'm going to the US, never looking back. That was it.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah. And now when I look back, it's so naive. It sounds like what was I thinking? How is it possible that you just leave for the US? What chances do you have to make it there? But I don't know, I just left.
And so then tell me about how you got into tech. Like, how did you decide? So you were in solar, you had this company, you had an exit, and then how did you decide, like, I'm going to start Eat Sleep?
So when I started doing some angel investing while I was having the American company. And that is when I met my co-founder, Max, who is our CTO. And so I started advising him because he was the CEO of a company at the time. And then with my wife, at the time she was just my girlfriend, but now she's my wife and she's a co-founder too. What we were doing hackathons on Sundays, just the two of us, right? We were a bit weird. And so we were playing with her because she's not an engineer, but she was able to build a website like overnight. And so we were just running tests. Let's try to sell this. Let's try to sell that. And then we had Max, we became friends and we started hacking on different projects. We did a couple of projects. There was one in 3D printing, one about a sort of blue apron, things like that. And we were just doing it for passion on Saturdays and Sundays. And then after, you know, the previous company was gone, it was sold, is when I started looking into sleep, because I wanted to sleep less to work more, good or bad. That's how everything started.
That's a very magic circle lawyer-like thing to say.
Yeah. But I started wondering, why do I need to sleep 8 hours? And I started looking at clinical papers, and there is no need to sleep 8 hours. And then I started wondering, but why there is no technology in my bed, right? If I live 100 years, I spend 30 years in bed, and this piece of shitty foam has no technology. Why is that? Can technology help me recover faster? And that is when Max built a prototype in his garage in San Francisco, and we organized a pajama party. And we called some friends to just try the thing. And they come, you know, they come with their pajama, some books, you know, to really try it in the proper way. We call like 5-6 people. And before they leave, one of them comes to me and say, can I invest $25K? I say, look, man, I don't even have a company, but if you really want to invest, why not? And that is how really everything started. And it went from a side project to a company.
So what were the core things that you were playing with in that prototype? Like, what were the kind of core things that you would do to optimize someone's sleep? And how did you even know what dimensions you could, you know, affect someone on?
So the first product we launched was doing two things, was measuring your biometrics seamlessly. Now you just go to bed and there are embedded sensors. And at the time it was only heating you. So there was heating only. But when we were 2-3 months in, through customer discovery to talking to other players in the industry, we immediately understood that the game changer was cooling. And we started looking into medical evidence, and there was medical evidence that cooling can help you fall asleep 20% faster, 20% more deep sleep, more REM, less wake ups and toss and turns. But it was really hard to develop it. We didn't have the money and we didn't even have the expertise. So we decided to launch with the original first product, which was just, you know, a sort of wearable that you don't have to wear, but just sleep tracking and heating. We did a crowdfunding campaign. The crowdfunding did reasonably well. We sold 8,000 units in pre-order. So I think it was the 16th largest crowdfunding campaign at the time. We got admitted to YC. YC passed on us twice.
Well, I don't think I didn't interview you, did I? So it wasn't my fault.
No, it was not your fault. So we apply, they passed. We reapply and they passed. And so then one day I received a call, an email, an introduction to a new partner who just joined for hardware. I said, look, I don't want to even meet him because they would pass again. I don't want to waste my time. So we meet him and say, you should apply. I say, no, man, I don't want to apply. It's a pain to do it well. And then we don't get a feature. And so we go back. I think it was like the last day, something like that, to apply. And we say, do we apply or not? We keep debating. And at the end, we decide, we say, look, we do it, but we do the whole application within an hour or two. There was like a time, a deadline, right? So we didn't waste time. So we do it, we ship it, we don't care. And then we got the interview. And so I think in the interviews, there was Gary, there was Jessica, there was Dalton. But the funny thing there, I don't think you were there, but so we came with the whole mattress. We came with the nightstand. We came with the light. And we brought them inside the hallway of YC. And so I think the real reason why we got admitted is not because they were believing what we were building, but just because we were scrappy enough and resourceful enough to bring this mattress with the cover and create a bedroom in like 30 minutes in the front of the room and give them a full demo of a mattress with the lights going on and off and the warming and the data and all that.
That's awesome. The demo always helps, like having that like really visual demo. I think that's key.
But it was so embarrassing with all the other founders there because they were all there on their computer, not nervous. And there was us with this massive, bed, building a bedroom in the middle of the hallway. So it was super embarrassing.
Whatever works, you know, it worked. So yeah. That's amazing. So what was your YC experience like?
We loved it. And I say that in all interviews. So it's not just because it's with you here. I think it was a mental game changer, right? You guys are the really push us. No, at the time you were a partner there, and you really push us to focus on progress. And so there is where now with the meetings every other week, there is where we understood how to focus on real progress, how to be scrappy, and not have any fear of what we were shipping. Actually, our office at the time was in the same building of Michael Seibel.
Oh, in Soma.
Yeah, we were the last floor of the same building. And so Michael probably, I think he got the unit number one that we built, probably number two. I got the number one because it was the one that could explode at the time. Yeah, we made a tremendous amount of progress. Obviously, we were also able to do a great round immediately after. I think our seed round was like 6 million, which at the time was pretty meaningful. And then after that, this is another cool story. So we are trying to set up manufacturing in China. It's not happening. And it was immediately after YC. And so I go to my wife and I say, oh, I'm going to China to fix this. And she says, when? I say, tomorrow. I just and she says, cool, when do you come back? I say, I don't know, it's one way only. I come once I fix it. So the bottom line is I moved to China for like a month or two to fix this thing. And then I finally came back.
I'm getting the sense that like when you're into something, you're like, I'm just going to go there and figure it out.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is, wherever it is in the world, I'm just going to go there. America, China, I'm going to go there and figure it out, which is one of those founder attributes that you really look for. You know, you want people who are just going to run through walls, whatever they are.
Yeah.
I hope you guys are enjoying the conversation so far. On this podcast, I always preach about practicing gratitude. And today, I'm thankful for our sponsor, Cash App, in making the quest possible. Cash App is the best way to spend, save, and invest in stocks, as well as buy cryptocurrencies in a way that's easy to understand and accessible for everyone. From payments to banking to investing, you can do it all on one platform. It's available for download on the App Store and Google Play, so you better go get that 10 bucks your friend owes you from 2 years ago. Now let's get back to the episode. So were there any moments when you felt like that were tough in the start? I mean, I'm sure there were, but like, what were the moments since like between YC and, you know, today you guys are like a pretty well-known brand, like one of the people who was innovating the most in kind of, I would say connected technology. Like what were the difficult points on that road, on that journey?
I don't know if I should say it, but I say it anyway. I think we died multiple times, man, but like, this close, but there is one that I really remember. I think we had a gentleman agreement with one of our investors from the seed to lead our Series A, and it was tied, not formally, but it was sort of tied to a letter of intent from a big mattress player that wanted to license our technology. And we were receiving the term sheet like, I don't know, in a day or two. And the big mattress players, they call me and they say, look, now we decided to pass. We don't want to do this anymore. And I tried to say, look, do I have to fly there? Tell me what to do. I mean, we can fix it. I can fix anything. Just tell me. But there was no way to convince these guys. So I called the investor, and in a nice way, the concept was cool. I got it. But no, I'm sorry, then this doesn't work for me anymore. And I understand business is business. He was really nice in the way he said it. But at that point, we were substantially like bad. Like, I think we had weeks of runway at the time. And what we were betting on just completely disappeared. Then we are still here. So we figured it out. We found another lead. So we were lucky and everything went now for the best. And the investor that passed still invested, just didn't lead. But I still remember we were already in New York at the time, and my co-founder Max, he smokes, at least he used to smoke. And so we were downstairs on the street and he was smoking. And we were talking about like these weeks of runway. And okay, if this falls apart, what do we do next? How do we survive?
Those are those incredibly stressful moments. And you like look back and you're like, well, I'm glad I went through it. But at the time, I'm sure it was terrible.
It was brutal. And because, you invest so much energy. And I think it's one of the things that PG says, right? You just don't want to go back to people and say you failed. Founders don't do this for money or for success or for the shiny objects. It's just, man, I want to make it work because I'm going to make it work, period. The benefits might happen, but I don't care. I just don't want to fail.
Yeah, there's a lot of ego and like your own identity when you pour so much energy into it that goes into that, your company and making it work. I'm curious, like, what's it been like to co-found something with your wife? Like, how has that process been?
I'm lucky because she's great, right? I'm the problematic one. I always think of work.
I should be asking her this question, probably.
Yeah. But I tell you a couple of funny stories that you will like. So for our professional life, we use Slack. For the personal life, we use WhatsApp. And so sometimes it happens that I'm screaming on Slack, like, we need to get this done today, or this is below par, it sucks. And then on WhatsApp, I write, oh, what do we have for dinner tonight? This is the one. The second is she created a sort of rule where I need to treat her like a colleague, right? And so her point is you cannot always talk of work, about work. Otherwise, I would always talk about work. And so she said that there is a certain time, call it 9 p.m., where you need to stop bothering me, okay? And so what I thought is, fine, I cannot talk to you directly just because we are together, but I can still Slack you like I would do with the colleague at 9 p.m. And so sometimes we are on the couch and she's watching TV and I start Slacking and I can hear the phone vibrating and me Slacking her. And then she looks at me and she says, really? And then we have one-on-ones because she reports to me. And so usually we do on Saturday morning. So we go for breakfast somewhere that we like, but then that is also one-on-one. But, I think it's really hard to find a partner you can work with. It's really probably 1 out of 1,000 people. But if you do, it becomes a superpower because we understand each other what we are going through, right? So if we're closing around and I need to work until late or there are urgencies or whatever, she gets it. She doesn't get annoyed. She works as hard as me. So it's not, I usually work on Sundays afternoon. She does as well. So we are really aligned and we understand each other in a way that wouldn't be possible if she was doing a traditional job.
I'm trying to imagine doing a one-on-one with my wife. And I think that it'd be like to be able to give someone the critical, honest feedback that you really should be giving them in a one-on-one. Like if you could do that with your partner, it'd actually be very good for your communication, I think.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people, with their partners, it's like hard to say difficult things that are like maybe not working, in the relationship or, it's uncomfortable to bring that up. And, if you're a good manager and you've been kind of experienced at doing one-on-ones, you'll have to do that. You realize like, well, I have to bring this. It's either going to be now or later when they like, I'm firing them or they're quitting. So like, I have to say something, say something about stuff. And like, if you can do that in your relationship, that would probably save you a lot of pain down the road. And your communication would be amazing.
Because so what I noticed, then we did some tweaks to perfect it. So the pro, since from the beginning, is obviously that you can be super direct. At least in my case, I'm super direct with her. So the risk you have is that you are a bit less professional, just because you are more relaxed and you think you can just say whatever you think in the way you want. So what I did, I started introducing my chief of staff. So in the one on Tuesday, he joined. We have a catch up on Tuesday as well. And so that gives a level of formality to the meeting. And so there is the agenda, everything like is prepared like any other meeting. And that improved things a lot.
Okay, so let's talk about like where 8 Sleep is today. Like your mission, you started off as we're going to try to help people optimize their sleep, right? So you could work more. Like, does it work? How has the product turned out?
So there are really 2 things that we want to do that are part of our vision. One, we want to compress your sleep, right? What if you could sleep only 6 hours and get more rest than when you were sleeping 8? Second, we want to save your life. So we are working on new technologies that can scan your body while you're asleep. In 2-3 years from now, we will be able to do a full body scanning while you're asleep and tell you, look, you have 80% likelihood to develop this illness within the next 3 years. And imagine doing like an MRI. Obviously, we wouldn't use x-rays because that's not healthy, but it's the same concept. Going to bed will be more valuable than going to your doctor. Today, we are, to a certain degree, we are already doing these 2 things. The current product improves your sleep through temperature, right? So we change your body temperature during the night. So you fall asleep faster, you get more deep sleep, less wake ups, less toss and turns. We have plenty of data. We can improve your deep sleep 20, 40%. So meaningful impact. And second, we are already tracking your biometrics, heart rate, HRV, respiration. And in some of the clinical trials that we are running, we peaked the first episode of atrial fibrillation. So soon our sensors will be able to pick any heart rate disease and also sleep apnea.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Like, what are the signals used for sleep apnea? I've like have had mild sleep apnea and went through sleep study and experienced all that. But I think we talked about this actually on Harry's podcast. I quit drinking. And then from there, like my sleep apnea actually improved a lot. But I remember diagnosing it was such a pain in the ass because I had to go into a clinic. They put the electrodes on me. You know, I spent the night in this like random hospital, you know.
In a year from now, you will be able to measure and monitor your sleep apnea with our device. And people like you that don't know to have it, they might discover that they have it without going to a sleep clinic.
So are you sleeping 2 hours less now than you used to?
Not 2 hours less. What we have seen, customers on average, they fall asleep up to 20 minutes faster. And on average, 20% faster. So we are reducing the time because they fall asleep faster, they get more restful sleep. But now we are working on the next generation of products where we will start tackling light, noise, oxygen, any environmental factor. And that is what will really take your sleep to the next level. I'm actually already sleeping on the next generation of products where all these factors are controlled.
How do you... Maybe you're not ready to announce it or anything, but like, I'm curious, like, how do you control light or all these other factors?
We are reinventing the form factor of the bed. So it will not just be something flat. It will be
some sort of capsule or something. I'm going to go into a sleep pod and then that's it. Dude, I'm actually pretty excited about that. I want to.
I knew you would.
Yeah. When are you going to launch it? When can I buy one?
Not too far, if not later this year, early next year. And next time you come to Miami, you tell me and you stop by my house and I show it to you.
Yeah, that's such a cool idea. So tell me about some other, like, what are some other sleep? Like, I feel like there's this huge interest in sleep now. You kind of were in the right place at the right time to some extent because, you know, in books like Why We Sleep that have come out, like, what's the practical advice as, you know, a sleep expert on like how normal people should improve their health and longevity through sleep or otherwise, actually, just any way that you're doing it?
The first thing I always say is a mental hack, and we call it sleep fitness. Think of going to bed and sleeping like going to the gym, right? You put the effort to go and train 1 hour, I don't know, 5 times a week, whatever, 3 times a week, whatever you do, right? You do it because it's something that makes your body healthy. It will help you know, being fit, look better, living a healthier and longer life. Going to bed is the same thing. You're going to the gym. You're doing something for your body, actually for your physical and cognitive performance. So you need to put the effort to sleep 7 or 9 hours. And when you have a chance, you should actually try to sleep longer, because that will drive more benefit for your recovery. And this is a big mental shift, because in the 80s and the 90s, there were now the entrepreneurs saying, oh, I'll sleep when I'm dead. But nowadays, being sleep deprived is, you know, the new smoking. So put the effort and do the sacrifice of sleeping longer, because you will see the benefit. This is attitude. Then what can you do to improve your sleep? The number one thing outside temperature, right? Temperature is really the big elephant in the room. But the second biggest one is consistency, right? Your body has a biological clock. And so you just need to train your body to feel tired at the time, fall asleep at the time, and wake up at that time naturally. If you just stick with that also during the weekends, you will see a meaningful improvement in just how you feel when you wake up. Then there are a bunch of other tricks, right? I have Philips Hue lights. They start now, they switch to orange around 7:30. They start dimming down. Another thing that helps me a lot is what they call thermal shocks. So you could do a hot and cold shower. You keep switching 10 times, about 30 seconds each. Or I'm building in my house a sauna and an ice bath. And if you do the sauna and the ice bath, man, it kills me. Like, then I sleep like a baby for 8 hours. It really takes all the stress away. And there are some saunas very cheap that you can buy on Amazon that are really small. And you know, you just want to create this thermal shock in your body, and that helps a lot. And then from time to time, you can use things like melatonin, but that is very subjective. The other big thing that I noticed that is massive to me are three. One of those is coffee. You should stop drinking coffee 8 hours before going to bed. Second, alcohol. And you and I, we were talking about that on a podcast. Alcohol, you don't notice, because sometimes, you know, it makes you a bit, you know, mentally relaxed. But the quality of the sleep you get is orders of magnitude lower than what you would get if you didn't have alcohol. Then obviously, if you had alcohol 4 hours before going to bed, it's slightly different, so it's not that bad. But in general, alcohol will have an impact on the quality of your sleep. The other thing that is super impressive, sometimes every month I do a week where I do calories restriction. So I eat less than 1500 calories. When I do that, in the morning, my HRV is somewhere between 20 and 40% higher than all the other weeks. And so how much you eat at night and what you eat has a major impact on sleep quality.
Well, one thing I noticed, so I fasted. I did a 5-day fast, like water and coffee only, or like I only drink decaf coffee. I switched because it was affecting my sleep. So, decaf coffee and water. And I noticed like I was waking up a lot during the night. And I think that's, you know, normal, or like it seems like people, you know, that's pretty common. And so I don't know, like the caloric restriction there, well, I guess I know that's beyond caloric restriction, right? But the fasting was like bad for my sleep in that case.
Yeah. So actually, Peter Attia was talking about that on the Tim Ferriss podcast, right? Because one of the things he was recommending was to move most of the food in the morning. If you're fasting, like I eat once a day, and you say, look, you should try to do it early in the morning, immediately after you train, because in that way, you're helping the muscles to build. But the struggle you will have is that then in the night, your sleep might be impacted. And what I have read in a bunch of studies is if you do a 5 days fasting, your sleep quality will drop considerably. In my case, I struggle more during the day because it's that when I don't eat, but then I still eat the 1500 calories at 7 p.m. So by the time I go to bed, it's not that I'm hungry. And so my sleep is not negatively impacted by that. But what your experience is super normal.
Yeah, that's the balance. But I'm heartened to know that I kind of did do most of the other things you're talking about. I'm building a sauna and cold plunge. It's like that definitely helps my sleep.
To anyone who have the space or they can afford, one thing for outside training for their health and wellness is just do a sauna and an ice bath. It's gonna be a game changer, because then the ice bath is gonna reduce inflammation across the whole body, and obviously inflammation is the key reason for cancer and many other, you know, diseases that you might develop over time. And so a cold bath is one of the healthiest things you could do outside training, sleep, and eating healthy.
When did you start getting into cold plunge?
So I started when I was traveling if I was finding it any time. But then I started reading a couple of books. There is Breathe and there is the Wim Hof book. And those two, I said, no, I need it. And so I bought this device that cools the water in my bathtub down to 5 degrees. But there are super easy way to do it. There are a lot of people you find on the internet that they do with freezers, the ones that you put in the garage. Yeah, and then you just put some silicone to make sure that it's not water resistant. You put the water, you can buy for $60 a pump on Amazon to take the water out, and that thing works. And game changer. Tony Robbins, I mean, a lot of famous people use it regularly because it gives you like this shock, adrenaline shock, because your body thinks you're almost dying. And so it reactivates a bunch of functions from your brain to the whole body. That is what you really want for longevity.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the things, the practices that are really healthy for you are some form of system shock or restriction, right? Like caloric restriction or fasting or exposure to cold exposure that really help you, your body reset. And we don't have that in the modern world. You know, we've kind of like made everything as comfortable as possible to our detriment.
Yeah. You want to stretch your body to like, you know, be alive, and all these actions are super helpful.
I'm always looking for other things to do. Like, are there any other practices like that you found that you recommend?
So I was outside. No, we say we obviously heat, right? High interval intensity training is a big deal for me. Spiking my heart rate. I see major changes when I do it for a couple of months. My heart rate rate, my heart rate at rest drops even probably 10% just because of creating continuous spikes when I train. Strength, obviously sleep, I'm obsessed. I fast, I eat just once per day, except the weekends when I do 16-8. I do the sauna and the ice bath, a lot of massage guns. I live with these on my desk. So when I'm in conference calls, I always do these.
Doing beach curls for your Miami lifestyle now.
Yeah. And then now I started experimenting with oxygen stuff, but I cannot disclose much because it's part of our roadmap.
Okay. Yeah. I think I read that an article about Justin Bieber doing like a oxygen pod or whatever, to increase his oxygen intake. Maybe that's the next fasting or whatever.
Yeah. I'll take care of that for you. Just give me a year, 1 year.
So tell me, you've raised a lot of money. How big is the company now? How has it been? I guess you're just getting to the exciting part, right? It seems like you've got the opportunity to build all this R&D to do kind of things that you haven't been able to do in the past. Tell me about what that's like.
Yeah. I think right now the company is reaching this probably new phase that is super exciting, where I think we found product market fit. People really like our product, sales and revenue. We're growing really fast. And we have recently raised a good amount of money. So we finally have plenty of capital to really execute. And so now the key is really higher because we are still small. We are around 50 people now. We expect then 2 or 3x the size of the team in the next year. We're investing a lot of cutting edge technology. And so that will be a big change for all of us, including myself as a CEO, because the two companies I had before, they reach more or less this level in terms of size of the company. And so now we need to really take it to the next one where we start becoming 150, 200 people. And next year, we target more than 100 million in revenue. So we are becoming a real business.
How do you think about scaling? You're a hardware company, right? You're inventing this hardware. How do you scale as a remote-only company? Or how do you build hardware as a remote-only company?
That is actually a debate we have internally. So outside hardware, everything else is working great remote, right? So it's a no-brainer. Software, growth, ops, all that. Since when we went remote, things just improved. Hardware, we are debating. We're still doing really well. We still have a studio and an office in New York. And so the hardware team is there. But as you start hiring 20, 30 people just for the hardware team, are we open to hire everywhere in the US, or we want them to be in New York? And I think where we will end up is an hybrid. We were just discussing that this morning, where there are certain roles, even for hardware, that can be remote because they work on some specific components that they just need to develop. And there are others where instead the group needs to be together.
It's an all an experiment in progress right now, right?
Yeah. You have hypothesis, you test it, we see it for 3 months if it works, otherwise we take action.
That's amazing. That's pretty much all the questions I had. I love it. Like, do you have any final thoughts or things you would leave people with about sleep or otherwise?
No, I mean, on sleep, it's really the concept of sleep fitness. I think that mental trick is the one that helped me the most, at least, right? Think of going to bed, like, you know, going to the gym. You need to put that time for your body, your longevity, and your health. Health is really based on three pillars, sleep, nutrition, and fitness. Sleep, try to sleep 7 to 9 hours. Nutrition, try to eat healthy, avoid glucose spikes. And fitness, do both weight training and high intensity interval training. This is the 80-20. If I could add something, I would add the sauna and the ice bath.
Cool. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. That was great. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Matteo. I really loved his thoughts on sleep and how to get a good night's sleep. Remember to enter the Universe App competition on my Twitter profile and check out the Universe App linked to in the show notes below. It's the easiest tool for building a website out there. I hope you guys all had an amazing week. Thanks for tuning in.